Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dan Irvine as my special expert guest. Dan Irvine at Radon BC is certified in both radon measurement and radon mitigation. Dan's long history in construction, concrete coring, and property management is a real asset in the radon industry. Radon BC maintains certification with continuing education and ongoing training upgrades. Radon BC employs a variety of measurement devices, including the annually calibrated and CNRPP approved Radelic Epern system. Radon gas is recognized by Health Canada, the US EPA, the United Kingdom's health organizations, and other developed countries as the number two cause of lung cancer right after smoking. Dan's advice to everyone is test your environment. Good morning, Dan, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, and thank you.
Dan, you are a vast resource when it comes to radon, and it's great to have you on the show. This is a very important topic because it's not something that really comes to mind when people are just having random conversations every day. But let's start off with what led you to developing an interest in radon management and control?
Sure. That's a great question. There was a few different factors. One was the growing public awareness in Canada. Canada seems to be about 30 years late to the game. If you had this conversation with people in the US, and there's mitigation companies that have been in business down there for 35 years. So there's a growing public awareness campaign funded by Health Canada, funded by provincial governments and provincial lung associations like the BC Lung Association. So that results in things like November being Radon Awareness Month in Canada and public events, you know, surrounding that initiative. Another factor was me being, you know, self-employed in construction technology business, where I'm doing things like scanning concrete for rebar with a radio frequency scanner, a radar scanner, and employing concrete cutting and coring equipment in my business, looking for outlets for that construction type of equipment. It made me very well placed to enter this field because it's another outlet for that equipment. And then finally, anything that's health related always gets my antennas to go up, and I start researching. And the more I researched this, the more fascinated I became with the whole field.
Right on. Now, nature produces radon. I know that much. And I remember reading about radon gas coming up from the earth itself through the building. But that's as far as my knowledge was way back in the day. And you've kind of renewed its importance and significance to me. But let's talk radon. What is radon and where does it come from?
Sure. Well, we won't spend much time on the high school science aspect of it. We'll just say that radon, or RN222, has an atomic number of 86, which means that's the number of protons. And then there's 136 neutrons. So 86 protons, 136 neutrons gives you the 222. That's a radon atom. And radon is one of the inert gases. So it's in there with krypton and argon, but it's the only one that's radioactive. So if you look on the periodic table of elements, and this is going back to high school science here, if you look at the periodic table of elements in the radioactive section of that, you'll find radon gas, which is the only one that's a gas, is about halfway down. And it falls right between radium and polonium. So it's the decay of radium that creates radon gas. And then that gas is about 8 times heavier than the atmosphere, which is why it pools in basements and crawl spaces and ground floors of buildings, so any building that has a ground level contact. But what's more important than what radon is what it does. If we view all energy in terms of frequency, and we get up to the point where we have ultraviolet light, which is at the upper end of the light spectrum. So we have color that we can see, light that we can see. And after we get past ultraviolet light, we get into what's called ionizing radiation. And radon is actually a gas that has ionizing radiation emitting from it. And the important part of that for listeners is alpha particles. So radon gas emits alpha particles, which is two protons, two neutrons. And these particles have enough mass and enough speed that the most simple way to measure this is with an alpha track detector. These particles will actually leave a skid mark on a piece of film in an alpha track detector, which is the most common measurement device. So just to summarize that, radon gas is the only inert gas that's radioactive. It's emitted from the nuclear decay of radium, and it emits alpha particles, a two-proton, two-neutron particle. It's identical to a helium atom, except it doesn't have electrons. So it's an unstable particle. And all of that is boilerplate science. There's no disputing that. And there's no disputing that because it has electrical properties, we have the ability to measure it to an infinitesimal degree. We really have developed the science to detect the presence of radon and to measure the alpha particle activity associated with it. So that's what radon is.
When you talked about radium, Madame Curie came to mind. Is there a relationship between radon gas and radium and her work that she did with radium?
Yes, there is. And that's a great question because it really helps when researching this to know the human side of the story. In fact, the measurement units in the U.S. and some other parts of the world are still called Curies, and this is named after Madame Curie. So Madame Curie, who most people will remember from their high school science classes, is really a fascinating individual and is credited with a lot of the groundbreaking research. What most people forget is that Madame Curie was at the Sorbonne University in Paris right around 1900. That's how ingrained in our history this science is. Madame Curie was a Polish woman named Maria Sladkowska, and I apologize for the pronunciation there to any Polish listeners, but she really was a genius, and she went to the Sorbonne to do research. And this is It's good that you bring this up because it really puts a human face on the whole subject. She was assigned as a research assistant to Henri Becquerel, which is what we use in Canada. So Mr. Becquerel was given the distinction of having a measurement unit assigned to his name. And then she married her professor at the university, and his name was Curie. So that's how the whole Curie name came to be associated with it. A fascinating woman, and she was responsible for a lot of the initial science and was responsible for the isolation of radium. So, and this led to, her developing a whole string of X-ray trucks during the First World War. So these were actually wooden-sided X-ray machines that were given credit for X-raying about a million soldiers in the First World War and credited with saving tens of thousands of lives by being able to isolate shrapnel and stuff. But yes, Madame Curie is part of the whole history of the radiation body of knowledge.
Okay, so there is this radon. It exists in the world. Why should we be concerned, and what have you discovered in your work that, is associated with the ground basement kind of perception or understanding of its effect on people?
Well, the effects of radon on health are really linked to the timeline of the effects of all kinds of radiation on health. So if we jump back to, say, the First World War again and working forward on that timeline, we had things happening like Radium Girls, and that's an awesome documentary if people want to get a bit of an education there. It's called Radium Girls. These were the extremely unfortunate women that were given the task of painting. They were called radium dial watches so that soldiers could see the time in the trenches. Unfortunately, they were also told to point their delicate brushes by wetting them with their lips and then dipping them in the paint. And these women suffered tragic fates, horrible fates. So we started building a body of knowledge about what radiation could do and what radiation sickness actually was. Another another development in that was the development of X-ray machines and the experimentation on human beings. And there's pictures that you can find on various research sites of unfortunate subjects with their hair falling out and radiation burns on their chests and faces as they were used for live experiments on these X-ray machines. So jumping ahead a little bit to the 30s, when studies started being done on why miners, particularly uranium miners, were coming down with lung cancer in far higher numbers that could be explained by any other factor. And as conditions started to improve in the mines and dust started to be mitigated and all of the other factors started to be taken into account and by and large eliminated, or at least efforts made to eliminate them, it became apparent that this radon gas, which was really isolated as an element before the First World War, certainly, and the properties became known. So the effects on miners were really the first red flag. So radon gas, being 8 times heavier than the air, tends to pool in low places. So a mine, an underground mine, is certainly a good spot for it to collect and pool, especially in the mines in the 30s and 40s. So out of that came larger studies that started to take into account where else this gas might accumulate. For instance, residences. So that led to the first national studies in North America, in the US and Canada, that involved thousands of homes that were started to be carried out in the 1970s. The big difference between the US and Canada was in the 1970s, when the results started coming back from these studies, the U.S. government and whatever their ministries were called back then started taking some action. Canada's study was largely shelved and ignored until we got into this century. And so the health effects of radon gas have been known since the 50s. The science has really come a long ways into allowing us to measure our residences and our workplaces and our mining environments since then.
Now, are there parts or regions of Canada or BC that yield higher levels of radon than other parts? Like, I guess this relates to where our house is built.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's part of the nuclear decay process and emanates from radium, these are things that large-scale airborne studies can map out. In fact, if you look at my website, radonbc.ca, or you look at Health Canada's website, or particularly the EPA, provided that their radon pages are still up there, there is a tremendous amount of information both on radon potential maps and actual radon measurement maps. The radon measurement maps are more prevalent in the U.S., where some states are actually broken down county by county as far as measurement goes. So it tends to take a broad swath in the U.S. from the northwest, and it kind of heads in a southeast direction, and then all the states underneath the Great Lakes are typically acknowledged as the higher areas. But again, that map is readily available. In Canada, there are a few provinces and a national map called the Radon Potential Map. That is basically a map of the underlying geology of the uranium. And where there's uranium, there's radon. More particular to BC, which is where we are, it gets a little more spotty because of the tectonic shift and the plates pushing up the mountains and the deposits getting all fragmented. So to answer your question, yes, there are very good maps that illustrate the radon potential. And based on the measurements that I've done, and the known elevated areas in this part of the world, those maps are proving to be pretty accurate. So in BC, British Columbia, the acknowledged elevated zones where won't be unusual for houses to test at 1,000 becquerels, the hotspots are particularly over in the Kootenays, a town called Castlegar, and around there, the Okanagan Valley where we are, and this broadcast is taking place from, is kind of patchy, but there are definitely elevated zones. So anybody who wants can go online either to my website or to a variety of websites, the BC Lung Association, and see these maps.
Right on. Now, you gave us a device that we use to confirm whether or not in our apartment, we were being exposed to high levels of radon. And of course, we discovered that we weren't, you know, because I think you knew in advance that we were one story up, not on the ground floor. So take us through the steps. Let's say that we've had some testing. You've come in and you've confirmed that there is an elevation of radon in a home. Let's start off with that device. Tell us what that device does and how it works, and then tell us what you would do after that and what the steps are involved for mitigation.
Sure. Well, there's two classes of devices that can be used to accurately measure radiation. So there's certified and sanctioned devices, and the one that you mentioned in the intro, the EPIRM Radilec device, is one. The AlphaTrack detectors, which are the most common ones. So if you phone a lung association or buy one from my website, the AlphaTrack detector, that's another sanctioned device, because these are calibratable devices. The one that I lent to you is a very good consumer grade one that I constantly test against my calibrated devices, so I can vouch for its accuracy. So that particular one is an alpha spectrometer based device, which gives you a reading in becquerels. It allows you to see a 1 day reading, a 7 day reading, and a long term reading on the amount of becquerels that you're encountering. So the limit recommended by the EPA in the US translates to 150. Don't forget, they use the Curies or picocuries measurement system. In Canada, we use becquerels, getting back to Mr. Becquerel from the Sorbonne University there. We use a limit of 200. So it was foreseeable that your apartment would test low, because I know there's a parkade, an open parkade under your apartment, and you really don't have any ground contact level units. So it would be unusual for that to test high. Then you switch to the kind of residence where maybe there's a full in-ground basement and there's various openings and cracks in the concrete that allow radon gas to enter. When we heat our homes, we create low pressure zones relative to the outside air in our basements. And we, in effect, vacuum up radon and all the other soil gases, methane and all of the other gases and particles and spores that are in the soil. We, in effect, vacuum these up into our residences. Radon gas, being 8 times heavier than the atmosphere, will then pool and be allowed to concentrate. So it's not unusual for me to measure a home that's at 1,000 becquerels. I've done a number of them, and particularly a crawl space, it could even be 1,000 or 1,500 becquerels. And what that means is, if you're breathing air that is 1,000 becquerels measured, that means for every cubic meter of air in every second, there's 1,000 of these alpha particles being created. So I know there's going to be another question on the effect of that, so I'll just leave it at that for now. But to answer your question, the reason that we end up breathing this is because we invite it into our indoor air environments, and then it ends up being trapped there and then circulated throughout the building with our various kinds of heating, ventilating, and air conditioning equipment. So moving on to the mitigation part of it, because I think that was part of this question, the most common method is what's called an active soil depressurization. So I just finished a house yesterday where we cored and cut some openings in the basement floor, connected a series of pipes to those openings after they had been excavated to a certain extent and backfilled with drain rock, installed an inline fan and exhausted it to the outside. So there's a variety of fans available. Depending on the nature of the soils you encounter underneath the slab and your ability to transmit a vacuum field out to the furthest reaches of the structure. So we actively depressurize the soils underneath the cement slab or the crawl space and exhaust that gas to the outside. And that's a simple explanation of how the mitigation system works.
Right on. Well, I know that radon is colorless, odorless, and tasteless, so you can't get a feel for this stuff, and this is where the technology comes in, and somebody with your expertise, very important. So I'm thinking that anybody that lives anywhere should really invest the time and energy to determine whether or not there is a risk and go from there. I'm sure that people aren't aware of it, and part of your objective is to raise the awareness of this risk.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that frustrates me, or that I don't really understand, is the unwillingness of people to actually just do the test. Now, I realize that there's a certain amount of I don't want to know factor, but particularly for your listeners who, by and large, will be health conscious and will be working out in indoor environments, the factors that come into play with the kind of structure you're in really should be front of mind awareness. Particularly if you're going to exercise in a basement gymnasium, and some gyms are in basements, there's some here locally, those environments really should be tested. Now, people can be forgiven for thinking that this might be a massively complicated process because it involves radioactive elements. But I'll go back to these alpha track detectors. There's millions of them produced worldwide. They're boilerplate technology. Radiation workers wear them with lapel clips in certain work environments. They cost $40, and people can just place those out, forget it for 3 months, send it to the lab, and get the results back. And now it's the same technology used in the U.S. The results will come back in picocuries. In Canada, the results will come back in becquerels. The conversion factor is 37 if you're having to do the conversion. But because it's so simple to test, I just feel that everybody should do it. Now, if you don't want to do that, because these alpha particles have electrical properties, the most definitive way to test is with a device that measures those properties. So if the negatively charged alpha particles are in the environment, you can place what I use is the Radilec EPERM system. You're in effect placing a battery in the environment that has a specific measured voltage, and then measuring it after a period of time. So these can be used for short-term tests. And the batteries will actually discharge proportionate to the amount of alpha particle activity. So a big discharge, say it goes from 500 volts down to 300 volts in 4 days, that will translate to a very high measurement. But if it only goes down 35 volts in the same period of time, then you will get a much lower result. So you can buy a $40 alpha track detector, which I highly recommend all indoor environments be tested with, or you can hire someone like myself to deploy one of these other more sophisticated devices.
Right on. So just a quick summary then in my head, radium is a precursor to radon. So radon is a decay product of radium. It's radioactive. It comes from the earth below us. If we're sitting on a structure or a basement or whatever, it can pool inside that if there's leaks inside or around the basement or the house. And if it doesn't escape, then it actually goes into us. And what your strategy is to provide an exit strategy for the gas so that as it's produced, you don't stop it from producing. You just allow it to be ventilated out of the house so it doesn't build up and cause any risk. Is that about right?
That's exactly right. We invite it to leave, and we invite it to leave through a sealed pipe and an inline fan that's also a sealed unit. So that part of the technology, once the measurement is done and the system is designed based on some vacuum testing of the subslab area, the actual installation is a fairly simple pipe and fan system. But they are very treatable. I've achieved anywhere between 75 to 95% reduction, depending on the subslab soil composition. So an interesting development last year in this part of the world, in this part of the country, in British Columbia, everywhere east of the Coast Mountains is now required to have a passive mitigation system installed at the time of construction. So instead of compacting sand underneath the slab, it's now a type of drain rock that allows this vacuum field to easily transmit out to the farthest reaches of the structure. And then that pipe is roughed into the outside. So it's everything is in except the fan. And I've actually measured houses that because of the chimney effect on that house, the chimney effect of the house on the pipe, i.e. a warm pipe going up through and creating a stack effect, there is a small vacuum level underneath the slab already, and that will go a certain way towards mitigating it. But you're right, the symptoms of the radon pooling are easily treatable with ventilating the subslab area.
Well, that's excellent insight, fantastic, for those who don't understand the importance and concern they should have with radon, especially, it doesn't matter whether you own a house, you got to live somewhere and it might be over a hot spot. So let's check it out. Now, can you tell us what your website address is, Dan, and what we'll find there?
Yes, my website is www.radonbc.ca. And in addition to a lot of the references that I've used here today to Madame Curie and Henri Becquerel, there's a bit of history on the whole radon awareness factor. So you can actually see what I'm talking about. But what people should watch on that website is a video link from the Berlin Science Museum where you can actually see the vapor trails left by these alpha particles in what's called a Wilson gas chamber. So if you picture a jet in the sky leaving a vapor trail, that's because it has mass, it's traveling at speed, and it depressurizes the air behind it, allowing suspended water particles, evaporated water, to condense, and that's what we see. The same thing happens in miniature with these alpha particles. You can't see the particles, but you can see the vapor trails they leave in an altered environment. So that part of it's indisputable. That's a video that everybody who has a question about this and is a more visual person than an auditory person should watch that video. That's my website. The two other ones that I recommend are the Nuclear Energy Industry, or NEI.org. And there's a bunch of background there, or nuclearsafety.gc.ca, as well as, I mean, you can Google the BC Lung Association or on any one of other a number of health sites.
Well, unlike radon, our time has evaporated into nothing. That was really good. Thanks so much for being my guest, Dan. And what have you got to say as a final parting comment to our listeners out there?
Well, seeing as most of your listeners are going to be very health conscious people, because I know the kind of business you're in, it just seems logical to me that if you're going into an indoor environment and getting your respiration up to, you know, whatever you guys get it up to when you're working out, that you should be hyper aware of what's in the air that you can't see, feel, taste, or smell. When you breathe in these particles, these alpha particles are emitted and they impact the cell tissue on your lungs and break the DNA strand in the cell. Some of these self-heal, but cells that reproduce with damaged DNA are the initial phases of a tumor. And that's how we end up with radon being acknowledged in all developed countries as the number two cause of lung cancer. So my parting comment is, for $40, test your environment.
Dan Irvine at Radon BC is certified in both radon measurement and radon mitigation. He has a wealth of information. Get to his website. Make contact with Dan if this is something that's on your mind. Dan, we really appreciate your time and effort, and we hope that you continue to get that message out.
Nice talking to you. Thanks very much.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com.
Represent a lifestyle. New way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.